So last night, the president asked for Ambassador Bolton's resignation. As I understand it, it was received this morning.
President Trump fires his national security advisor. It's Wednesday, September 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll also find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, North Korea welcomes new talks amid missile launches. Global military spending is up. Bill Gates weighs in on trade, tracking coffee, and new cars track the road. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump has fired his national security advisor, John Bolton. Trump's announcement came just 90 minutes before Bolton was to appear alongside Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin at the White House press room podium for a briefing. Pompeo said the resignation came early Tuesday.
So last night, the president asked for Ambassador Bolton's resignation. As I understand it, it was received this morning.
On his Twitter account, Trump announced, "I informed John Bolton last night that his services are no longer needed at the White House. I disagreed strongly with many of his suggestions, as did others in the administration, and therefore I asked John for his resignation, which was given to me this morning." The president also thanked Bolton for his service and said he would be naming a replacement next week. The White House says Charlie Kupperman will serve as acting national security advisor. When the two cabinet members appeared before reporters, they were asked what Bolton's departure meant. With many foreign policy issues at hand, including a trade war with China, North Korea's nuclear program, and security in the South China Sea, Pompeo said U.S. foreign policy goals and priorities of the administration have not changed, although he had differences of opinion with John Bolton.
There were many times Ambassador Bolton and I disagreed, that's to be sure. But that's true for lots of people with whom I interact. My mission set is always to make sure, as I run the Department of State, is to deliver America's diplomacy and to work with the team, whether it's the Treasury or the President's staff, to make sure we get good outcomes. I know everyone's talked about this for an awfully long time. There were definitely places that Ambassador and I, Bolton and I, had different views about how we should proceed.
Bolton, a veteran of three previous Republican administrations, is viewed as a hardliner on defense and security issues and was chosen by Trump in March of 2018 to replace H.R. McMaster, a former Army Lieutenant General, as National Security Advisor. Bolton, a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, was brought into the Trump administration after a stint as a commentator on the Fox News Channel, which is generally supportive of President Trump. Pompeo said Bolton, like the other members of Trump's cabinet, serve at the president's pleasure.
The president's entitled to the staff that he wants at any moment. This is a staff person who works directly for the president of the United States, and he should have people that he trusts and values and whose efforts and judgments benefit him in delivering American foreign policy. It's what, as cabinet member, Secretary Mnuchin and I try and do each and every day, and when the president makes a decision like this, he's well within his rights to do so.
Trump's first choice for the position, Michael Flynn, also a retired Army Lieutenant General, lasted less than a month in the job before being fired. He was subsequently convicted of lying to the Federal Bureau of Investigation about a December 2016 conversation with the Russian ambassador to the United States and is awaiting sentencing. VOA Asia on Facebook and the VOAnews.com website are great digital destinations and resources to read and see more on our top story. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit VOAnews.com. Hong Kong leader warns United States not to meddle in city's affairs. Hong Kong activist Joshua Wong says my town is new Cold War's Berlin. Solomon Islands says business as usual with Taiwan as it mulls diplomatic switch to China. North Korea fires projectiles hours after calling for talks. Australians flee homes as police investigate suspicious fires. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. North Korea has offered to resume stalled nuclear talks with the United States. It has also conducted yet another weapons test. More on North Korea's latest conflicting signals from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
Hours after offering to sit face-to-face with U.S. officials, North Korea launched its 10th round of weapons since May. South Korea's military says the two projectiles traveled 330 kilometers, another short-range test. The tests appear designed to increase leverage ahead of nuclear talks, if those talks ever take place. Late Monday, senior North Korean diplomat Choi Sun-hee said Pyongyang was willing to sit down with U.S. officials in late September. But she warned the United States must present a new calculation method or risk ending the talks altogether. Even if talks did occur, Seoul-based political analyst June Park says it's not clear either side has softened their stance.
What will come out of the meeting is still under question because Choi Sun-hee has been noted as saying she expects to see a different kind of calculation method. And I'm not quite sure whether the U.S. is ready to present something like that.
Talks have been stalled since a second summit in February between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, ended abruptly without a deal. Trump rejected Kim's demand for sanctions relief in return for partial denuclearization. Kim agreed in June to resume working-level talks, but North Korean officials have not shown up. North Korea has given the United States an end-of-the-year deadline to change its approach, but Park says it's not clear how firm that deadline is.
At this point, under their statement, it sounds very firm, but if ever there is a meeting held, let's say, during the fall, and they are working towards some kind of an agreement, you need time to work on it. I think it could be a flexible date.
Trump has not responded to the latest launch. The U.S. president has said he has no problem with North Korea's other short-range launches. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, the Chinese woman accused of breaching security at President Donald Trump's Florida resort continues to represent herself as her trial entered its second day Tuesday. 33-year-old Yujing Zhang was arrested at Trump's Mar-a-Lago private golf resort in Palm Beach in March. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Today is September 11th, and the nation pauses to remember the lives lost in the deadliest terrorist attack on American soil. President Trump, Vice President Pence, and others are to attend ceremonies to honor the nearly 3,000 people killed when al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked four commercial jets, rammed two into the World Trade Center buildings in New York City, and one into the Pentagon near Washington. A fourth plane went down in a field in Pennsylvania after heroic passengers attempted to overtake the hijackers. 18 years later, the world's military spending has reached an all-time high. That's according to data from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, which has been tracking military spending since 1988. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb breaks down the reasons why and what's at stake.
Military spending is soaring to new heights, with $1.8 trillion spent in 2018 alone.
We have to see that as a warning signal, not necessarily something which will lead to war, but something which needs very close attention.
Military spending hit a post-Cold War low in 1998.
Now remember, oh my God!
Then 9/11 happened. Fueled by fighting a global war on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq, military spending by the United States and its allies shot up until the Obama administration began making military budget cuts. Now, military spending is on the rise again, thanks to Russia and China.
We have two revisionist powers that would like to be in a place where they're not at. We certainly don't want that to happen, not only for U.S. interests, but also on behalf of our partners and allies.
The United States accounts for more than a third of global military spending. It boasts 11 aircraft carriers, a powerful nuclear arsenal, new elite fighter jets, and about 2.1 million troops. Experts agree its military remains the dominant force.
I think sometimes there's a tendency to make Russia and China 30 feet tall, and they're not. There are real vulnerabilities there that we could exploit in a conflict, but there are also areas where they're more advanced than we are.
China is now the world's second biggest military spender. going from just 2% of the world's military budget in 1990 to 14% now.
Our allies and partners watching this who work with us should have no illusions that China is undertaking a comprehensive effort to modernize their military so that they can coerce and defeat us and our allies in a future conflict.
China built 2 aircraft carriers in the past decade, and a third is under construction. It has developed its own elite fighter jets, and troop numbers have swelled to more than 2.5 million. And China is investing in new technologies, including hypersonics, weapons that would fly 5 times the speed of sound.
That will be perceived as a threat by its neighbors, and those neighbors will also then react to that.
For example, India upped its military spending more than $11 billion in just 3 years, now ranking 4th overall. Although Russia slipped from the top 5 spending countries in 2018, it still has NATO's attention after invading Georgia in 2008 and annexing part of Ukraine in 2014. The 29 NATO countries spent $963 billion, 53% of world military spending in 2018. And that number is likely to increase as the U.S. continues to pressure allies to spend 2% of their gross domestic product on defense.
I don't think we can let countries off the hook. You can't simply substitute, say, well, my 2% is going to go toward technology or I'm going to build infrastructure. I can't deter a Russian brigade with a road. We need real capability.
As nations prepare for worst-case scenarios, world powers are fully aware that any potential conflict among them would be catastrophic. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
As we remember September 11th, 2001, many tributes and stories from that day may be found on our website at voanews.com. Coming up, if you visit Japan, carrying physical cash may be the way to pay during your stay. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. Alibaba Group founder Jack Ma, who helped launch China's online retailing boom, stepped down as chairman of the world's biggest e-commerce company Tuesday at a time when its fast-changing industry faces uncertainty amid a U.S.-Chinese tariff war. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues amid a growing trade war with China, Microsoft's founder continues to cultivate relationships on the mainland. While longtime electronics leader Japan has a cash-based economy that is slowly, if not grudgingly, moving into the digital age. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Despite increased trade and economic tensions between the United States and China, Bill Gates continues to cultivate a business and philanthropy presence in the country. Microsoft founder Bill Gates.
You know, my first exposure to China was through my work at Microsoft. And Microsoft has an amazing group of employees in China.
Through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Bill Gates has also been working with China to address health inequality and poverty issues in the country. It has helped to grow China's capacity to be a partner in Africa in global health and development. While he worries about U.S.-China relations, Gates says that the toughest problems can still be tackled through innovation.
You know, now China has joined the United States as one of the 2 most innovative countries, whether it's work in the digital space or the health space or thinking through what breakthroughs we need to stop climate change. And we need that innovation power to deal with these huge problems in the world.
Despite the business relationship between China and Microsoft, Beijing has carried out several crackdowns on internet freedoms, including blocks on Instagram, WhatsApp, and other foreign internet products. In Japan, 4 out of 5 payments are still made with cash. While the world's biggest economies have embraced electronic payments, Japan's aging population still prefers physical money. Akiko Yamanaka is the owner of Kaguma Cafe.
Many customers say they simply don't understand it. Even if they know they can use cashless service, they don't try to learn how to do it. When they can pay cash, they just do it.
At Katsuyuki Hasegawa's bike repair shop in Tokyo, only 2 or 3 people a week use the PayPay system, which lets customers use a QR code via their smartphones. Hasegawa says that his customers like to chat while making their payments and that they don't need to make quick transactions. In Japan, more than 28% of people are 65 or over, making it hard to persuade consumers to adopt new technology. The government is hoping to capitalize on the wave of tourists that the 2020 Tokyo Olympics will bring in, with the goal of doubling the amount of electronic payments to 40% by 2025. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news break from VOA Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Monday he was looking forward to a completed U.S.-Japan trade agreement at the United Nations General Assembly in New York later this month. Pompeo said the two countries had reached consensus on agricultural, digital, and industrial issues. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, blockchain technology, a high-tech way to securely manage and protect data, is best known as the driver of the cryptocurrency Bitcoin. Now, a U.S. coffee importer is using it to improve the lives of coffee farmers and some of the poorest communities in Central America. Faith Lapidus chains together details.
Ivan Herrera grows coffee in the hills above Santa Rosa de Lima, 40 kilometers outside Guatemala's capital city. She's proud of her crop.
We're going to pick a great coffee. That's what we've been working towards, and this year we're seeing the result of 2 years' hard work.
Like most of the world's coffee farmers, Herrera used to sell her product on the International Coffee Futures Market, where buyers agree to purchase the beans at a predetermined price for a future delivery date. That depresses prices and leaves them vulnerable to currency fluctuation. But now, Herrera sells directly to an independent coffee roaster in the United States and gets a premium price. The system is the brainchild of Paul Tupper and his brother Scott, who harnessed a successful blockchain technology business in Seattle to tackle the issue of environmental sustainability in the developing world.
Anyone who's a fan of coffee and many other goods has seen the proliferation of standards and certifications that are out on the market, and it can be confusing for a consumer. Blockchain can lay on top of all of this as a way to verify what's actually going on financially and socially.
Blockchain technology creates a ledger to record, manage, and confirm transactions transparently and verifiably by all stakeholders, such as the coffee grower, the importer, and the roaster. The brother's company, Onda Origins, believes that enough consumers will care about where their coffee comes from to pay for quality roasted small batch beans, so it can pay its growers a premium price that exceeds even standard fair trade coffee. The guaranteed higher prices will allow growers like Yvonne Herrera to not only invest in and protect her land, but also pay better wages to her workers, raising the standard of living across her community. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
The concept car shows in Los Angeles are a showcase for style and technology, but most of the cars will likely never be sold to customers. Rather, like some of the crazy styles at New York fashion shows, they are there to inspire both car owners and producers. Gina Dulo visited one such show in Monterey, where the four-wheeled trendsetters ran the show.
The first ever concept car, Buick Y-Job, was created in 1938 by General Motors automotive designer Harley Earl. It was the first car that had its headlight built into the fenders and not separately attached. It also had a revolutionary feature, electric windows.
This was the very first designer car. And it was designed to do one thing, and that was to show what was coming in the future. So you could see these various elements and say, really, I like that. That's what we want to do.
Buick Y-Job was also the first car created by designers and not just engineers. The goal was to marry efficiency and style. Today, more than eight decades later, the creators of the Lotus Evija electric sports car are still trying for the perfect combination of form and function. This electric car can accelerate from 0 to 100 kilometers per hour in under 3 seconds and has a maximum speed of 320 kilometers per hour. To get that kind of performance, the car is light and streamlined.
The way we've done it on this car is kind of quite interesting. We've taken inspiration from motorsport cars and how they manage airflow through the car as well as over the external surfaces.
Though Lotus Evija is not designed for mass production, Lotus thinks it will make about 130 of them. There were some two-wheel specials on display as well. Curtis Motorcycles presented an electric motorcycle Zeus Radial V8 that has a battery range of about 200 kilometers in the city setting and just over 100 on the highway. One of its selling points, it's quiet.
We do live in a world where we're bombarded with information, and the Curtis riding experience is to escape that and get back in touch with what's going on inside of you, our customer.
Concept cars are all about what could be, and for many engineers, there is no greater challenge than creating the car of the future. Jenny Adulo for VOA News, Monterey, California.
It might seem impossible to get a room for under $30 a night in New York City, but you can if the accommodations are a bit unconventional. Elena Wolf has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Coney Island, New York City, seems to have it all. The beach, the ocean, and an amusement park.
Can I help somehow?
No.
Sand sculptor Matt Long doesn't like to chat with passersby who stop to admire his work. It is his fragile sculptures that he's focused on.
Can you hand me that brush?
That one.
And I don't have a feather duster, so I'm just gonna tickle the edges with this to soften them, so they look like stone.
For over two decades, Long has been building sand sculptures. This is the largest and the only sand castle in the world that can actually host guests. The price for this unusual sand B&B is $29 plus tax. The ocean and an amusement park are close by.
You have to remember that Coney Island once had a hotel in the shape of an elephant. That goes way back to the heydays. The kind of weird and quirky and fun things that Coney Island's known for.
Long has worked on more impressive buildings in his career, but for him, sand has proven to be more durable.
When my daughters were young, I was walking, I saw a guy making a little thing on the beach. It looked really cool. I could try that. And I did, and my daughters didn't really care too much. But I was hooked.
Long spent years learning his craft, and some of his fellow sculptors are still supporting him.
You know, I'm pretty sure I'm booked for Saturday night, so I'm looking forward to bringing my wife up here and checking out, sleeping inside of a sandcastle. A sand sculpture, the sand mansion they call it, is going to be incredible.
Despite what people think, sand sculptures can be extremely durable. This castle can survive at least a year. Long is okay knowing his sculptures won't last. For him, they are a reminder that nothing is forever, and anything can bring joy. For Elena Wolf in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And it's true, nothing is forever, like our program. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download us as a podcast. And be sure to check us out on VOA Asia Facebook as we stream our program, as well as our website, voanews.com. We're also on the radio. Check us out if you happen to be in Quezon City, the Philippines, at DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman. Thanks to everyone there who has tuned into our program today, and we invite you back again. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Cedric Franklin, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Kelly Jean Kelly. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.